Welcome to Mind Your Biz Today on South Florida's only all business radio station, 880 AM. Today's business world is fast-paced and ever-changing. Gain a competitive advantage by listening to Mind Your Biz Today, hosted by Janie Smith, CEO of Smart Advantage. Janie is a best-selling author and business consultant extraordinaire with over 35,000 hours consulting C-suite executives. She will help you navigate today's business hurdles and maximize your opportunities with thought-provoking discussions with CEOs, business authors, and thought leaders. Learn the latest trends and profit-producing ideas for growing your business. Here's your host, Janie Smith.
Mind Your Biz Today is brought to you by Vistage, the world's leading CEO organization whose member companies outperform the market. Visit Vistage.com today.
Welcome back, South Florida. Welcome to Mind Your Biz Today. I'm your host, Janie Smith, President and CEO of Smart Advantage. I'm the author of Creating Competitive Advantage, and that book tells you how you can find out what your competitive advantages are and how to increase your close rates. A very important part of that book deals with something we refer to as dangerous disparity. Dangerous disparity is some research we've done over the years at Smart Advantage. I've talked about this on earlier shows, but we have some guests with us today who are going to give you some real good answers on how to avoid dangerous disparity. Dangerous disparity, one of the ways in which we describe it is that most companies are out there telling their customers that you should buy from me because we've got good customer service, good response rate, and technical know-how, and maybe those three things aren't the tiebreakers in your customer's buying criteria. So dangerous disparity is avoided when we actually do some good, solid research with customers to find out what they really care about. So we're going to talk to some experts today. I'm thrilled to have some of my colleagues on the show with us today, and I'm going to introduce them, and then we're going to get into some of the explanations about how to get information from your customers. So instead of selling and messaging around, let's say, ABC, but your customers care about DEF, how do we find out what those things are? How do we get very, very focused on that which the customer values? And if you've been with us on earlier shows, I've given a number of examples of organizations that have done this and gotten it, have not done their research and gotten it wrong, and then when they've lined it up, they've increased their close rates very dramatically. So our guests today are my colleagues, Craig Mowry. He's a partner here at Smart Advantage. He's presented competitive advantage workshops in the United States, Canada, Europe, and Asia to over 150 companies, ranging from small cap to Fortune 100 companies. Smart Advantage is voice of the customer expert. He designs market research, and he's interpreted results for over 50 projects and over 100 companies. He's consulted nationally and internationally for 35 years. He's consulted to over 400 business owners in the food industry, one of only two consultants selected by Florida Power and Light to present to the Japanese Union of Scientists and Engineers. So you can see he's got an engineering background. He's very much the left brain. We call him the left brain part of the Smart Advantage organization. And also with us today is Brian Neff, who is a general manager who also works with clients. Brian has worked for 9 years with the South Florida Manufacturers Association previously, and was responsible for service quality, membership development, retention, public relations, industry representation, and establishment of new products and services. So we've got a lot of brain power with us this afternoon, and we're going to learn some things from them about customers. So nearly every company we talk to claims to be customer-focused, yet their focus is internal. We're going to talk about three perspectives, yours, your employees, and your customers, and how we get those in alignment. So we're going to start with Craig, and we're going to ask Craig to give us a couple of case studies, some examples. Well, first, Craig, before we get into the case studies, I think it'd be a good idea if you tell the listeners what exactly double-blind market research is and why you recommend that over other methodologies.
Sure, I'd be happy to. All right. Blind market research. You're probably, many of your listeners are probably familiar with blind market research in terms of experiments done by universities and labs and things where the subject does not know that they're being tested, or they don't know, the interviewer doesn't know which of the subjects is given the placebo and which one gets the real drug.
Yep.
That's blind research. Double-blind research is when neither the subject nor, in our case, the interviewer, know who's sponsoring the research.
And that allows for what?
It takes a whole level of bias out of it. Think of it this way. If I call you on the telephone and I say, hi, I'm Joe Smith, car dealer. What's the most important thing to you when you buy a car? You're going to talk to me in terms of some negotiation, aren't you? You're going to hope you know it's me. You're going to come to see me about the car. You're going to think about what you say. You're going to flavor your responses with some negotiating power. You're going to try and get some leverage in the way you respond. If, on the other hand, I call you and say, Auto Trend Magazine. I don't even know if there is such a thing. But if I'm Auto Trend Magazine and I want to ask you what's important to you, there's no negotiation. You're not buying a car from me.
Oh, so you get all of the bias out and maybe the truth will come out.
And that's what we hope for, yes. And it does work. It's when neither the interviewer nor the interviewee has any idea who's sponsoring the research, it takes out one or two levels of bias. That's what's so powerful about double-blind research.
So where does this, it's interesting because the point you make is that almost always in when the customer is talking to the company, they're talking about price because they're negotiating. How often in research does price actually come up as a number one buying criteria in reality?
If I think back through the 100 market research studies we've done, I can recall one where it came up the top.
And where does it usually come up if it's not number one?
For if it's not number one, it's usually in the bottom half, frequently in the bottom quartile.
Isn't that interesting? So all these companies who are caving in on price during recession are caving in where they don't need to cave in, because if they'd invested in double-blind research, they'd know that it's just a negotiation ploy. It's not really what they're looking for.
That's right. In fact, a couple of our clients, when they've done the market research and find out how low on the criteria, the hierarchy, price came in, they successfully raised their prices.
Oh, I remember you telling me, wasn't there one that's a trucking company that did that, and they were shocked to find they didn't even lose one customer.
That's right.
So it's real hard for people to buy that. They just don't get it. A lot of companies don't get it. They're so sure that it's price because they hear from their salespeople all day long, price, 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 so they cave in on it. And I think I remember you saying once they should not be using price. They should not be using their sales force as their market research. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay, so tell us some more, Craig. Give us a couple of, if you can, some case studies, specifics on how this is played out.
Sure. We had one particular client where what they thought was number one. Let me set the stage here. When we conduct a market research, double-blind market research, that consists partly of asking respondents about 18 to 20 to 21 different possible attributes, things that they might value in their buying decision. At the same time that we have the market research firm ask those questions of the survey respondents, we at Smart Advantage ask those same questions to our client. So we find out what the client thinks are the answers going to be.
What's your best guess?
Yeah, exactly, yes. One of our clients, what they guessed was going to be number one came in dead last.
Oh, not good.
Several others, what they thought was going to come in number one, came in somewhere in the middle. That's fairly common. We had, ones that come off the top of my head, we had a pest control company and a financial training company that did not guess any of the top three most important attributes.
Wow, that's got to wreak havoc with their advertising and marketing. I mean, if you're spending a lot of money and you're advertising a big message because you think something's important to your customers and it's not, then your advertising dollars are going down the drain, aren't they?
That's true. Two others, there was a dental insurance company and a tile manufacturer. Each of them guessed one of the top 10. Out of the top 10 most important attributes, they guessed one right.
Wow. So they were not even remotely in alignment with what their customer values. So it's not just about your marketing and advertising message. It's about what you're delivering internally, right? I mean, if you're not even aware of the number one, two, and three things that value are valued, then it's you're way off course. Let's ask Brian here. He's signaling to me. He's got an example here. So let's hear that, Brian.
One of the clients that we work with, we surveyed their employees, and there was a big mixture even within their own employee base. Half the group thought that one attribute would be the top thing that their customers bought on. The other half thought it would be the least important thing that customers bought on. So there was no alignment on what their message is or what even they offered.
Well, this gets scarier and scarier the more we talk about this, because not only are they not in alignment with their customers, they're not in alignment with each other. So if they don't know what's important to their customers, and every executive in the company has a different focus, then their resource allocations may be out of alignment as well. So, Craig, back to you. What, you had another example there you wanted to share? Or Brian, did you have one? I mean, I know both of you have said you had lots of them.
Yes, I've got one here. This was a firm we worked with up in New Jersey, I believe it was, a commercial developer. This was a commercial development company up in New Jersey who, you might guess, they're real estate. It's commercial real estate, but still it's real estate. They were convinced that the most important thing was going to be
location,
location, location, location. Sure, they even placed bets on it. We did the research, we came back and presented it to them, and the most important thing to the tenants in their buildings was the security of the building.
And so where did location come in?
Fourth.
Wow, so it wasn't even one, two, or three, and that's an eye-opener for anybody in real estate who's been chanting location, location, location for years.
So not only were they surprised that security came in number one, they didn't believe it. It took us, I don't know, maybe 20 or 30 minutes of discussing the results of the market research and the specific details of how many respondents
there were
and all
so
that.
So how many tenants did you interview in that particular case?
100.
100. And out of the 100, how many said security was number one?
94.
94 out of 100, and yet the company didn't believe it, nor did they guess it.
Right.
And what's interesting is this is not anecdotal in the sense that it's unusual. From what I experience with you guys is that this happens almost all the time.
It does. Nearly every time there is some sort of disparity between what our customer thinks is important and what their customers really say is important.
Okay. And Brian?
We had another example with a distributor who was very proud of the fact that they shipped out a product the same day it was ordered. And we tested that, and it came in roughly middle of the pack. But what came in number one was on-time delivery. Well, the whole company was structured around shipping the same day, not even focused on the customer, and the customer was concerned about when it got there. Getting there early wasn't always considered a good thing. And we had to spend quite a bit of time, almost an hour, trying to convince them that the difference between on-time and same-day shipping was so significant that they had to reconsider how they even structured their internal operations.
Yeah, because same-day shipping, getting it out of our door, doesn't mean it gets there when you want it to get there. And so they weren't focused on the receiving end. Is that it?
And sometimes it got there too early.
Yeah.
The customer wasn't ready for it.
Oh, that's interesting. They don't want to have to stock it or warehouse it or put it somewhere.
Well, especially if you're set up for just-in-time delivery, then you're getting there early costs them money.
Very interesting. So, okay, we're getting ready to take a break here. We're going to hear from our sponsor, Vistage, in a second, and then we'll be back and we'll be asking you guys some more questions about market research and maybe give some tips to our listeners on what they can do and should be doing now that we see this nightmare before us. Okay, thanks, gentlemen.
We'll be right back with Mind Your Biz Today and Janie Smith after this word from our sponsors.
As the CEO, are you avoiding tough decisions? How can you do more with less? Who do you turn to for real advice? What do 14,000 companies who have unparalleled access to new business perspectives, innovative strategies, and actionable ideas have in common? Vistage. Vistage is the world's leading CEO organization who offers their members business coaching benefits not available anywhere else. To see if you qualify for membership in Vistage, Florida, contact Chip Webster at 1-800-733-4832 or visit Vistage.com today.
Here is Janie Smith with Mind Your Biz Today.
Okay, we're back to Mind Your Biz Today. Please visit our website, mindyourbiztoday.com. Send us your comments, your show ideas, any particular business topics that you and your business are struggling with or need help with or would like us to dialogue about. Please let us know. We're bringing in experts from all over on every business topic you can imagine, so we're happy to hear what your needs are today. So again, it's mindyourbiztoday.com. Okay, welcome back. We're back with our guests, Craig Mowry and Brian Neff, both of whom are principals at Smart Advantage, and we are talking about the research that companies do or need to do or don't do sufficiently or use sufficiently to get solid alignment with their customers and internal alignment to make sure that they're delivering exactly what the customer wants. So let's get back. We just had we're talking with Craig on some case studies, and now we're going to talk to Brian. One of the things that he highlights for us is the difference between what your prospects say they look for when they're choosing a company to buy for, and is that different from what customers who work with you currently choose? Go ahead, Brian.
One of the great mistakes companies make is they think that prospects and customers buy for the exact same reasons. And we have to oftentimes insist to our clients that they separate them because we found over time that they do not buy for the same reasons. And if you think about it, it's pretty obvious. Your customers have already chosen you, and they chose you for a set of reasons. Your prospects, or those who do not buy from you currently, have not chosen you, so you need to learn what it is that they buy on and what criteria and what attributes are most important to them when they make a buying decision. Prospects are, it doesn't matter if you're talking businesses or retail, prospects are people who don't buy from you and may not even be aware that you're in business, especially if you're selling B2B right now. And that's often the case we find with mid-size and small companies, is they're not always aware who the customer or who they can buy from.
Sure. This is Craig. I want to add something onto that if I can. What we've seen sometimes is that customers become accustomed to what you deliver.
They take it for granted.
Exactly, yeah. If on-time delivery is something you do and they value it, it's very important, and you do it consistently well, particularly if you never even tell them, if you don't remind them you're doing that, if you don't remind them that's why they're doing business with you, they take it for granted. So it moves down on their importance.
And isn't it also true that if you're giving them something that they value, but all your competition does too, then it just becomes a given, and they don't value it anymore because, as you just said, they take it for granted.
That's true. The opposite end of that may be a prospect who has perhaps their experiences that it's almost always late. I think of one client we had, this is several years past, but it was a seafood company. And for some reason, the whole industry suffered from a perception of late delivery. So until they're able to determine that that was very important and talk about how well they did at it, they were tarred with that same brush.
Ah, that's true. So we have the industry fails miserably at something, and there's one company that does well. Unless they really communicate that message, nobody's going to believe they're any different than everybody else in the industry.
Until they do some research to find out how important that is, they don't even know they should talk about it.
Okay. All right. So, Brian, you had an example for us on differences between prospect and customers?
Sure. One of our customers was a pharmaceutical firm. And they were pretty well convinced that they had a membership system, and they were pretty well convinced that their members bought for the same reasons that prospects would buy for. So when we split the research out between prospects and customers, we learned that when it came back, that quality was the number two most important consideration for why their current customers bought from them. But guess what? Their prospects, who were aware of them, only considered it number six. It wasn't as important to them. So when you look at how you message or develop your marketing or your advertising or even your sales, if you were to say, we're a quality producer, well, that might resonate with your current customers. But on the other hand, in this instance,
the prospects, that's not even top three in their consideration.
Well, sure, because also when you're saying quality, it's interesting, as we say in Creating Competitive Advantage, my book, your definition of quality and mine could be light years apart. But if I'm your customer, I know exactly what you mean by quality because I'm experiencing it. But if I'm a prospect, I have no idea what you're defining as quality.
Exactly. Another example we ran into with a web design company, they sold mostly to businesses located in Canada. And one of the things that they were convinced that their customers bought for, or even prospects, used them to design their websites was because they felt it could raise their SEO rankings. And we have gone through that in our office many times. We know that that is something that is important, that we look to our web design company to help us with that as well. So they're not far off in terms of how some companies actually view it. But they're, and for their customer base, what they found out is, yep, you're right, that was important. But when they went out and wanted to sell to the prospects, guess what? That didn't rate all that highly. What rated highly to prospects was the ability of the web design company to make it simple and easy to understand the web development process.
It's interesting because it sounds like it's a matter of steps. In other words, if I don't have a website yet, I really want to make sure it looks good and it's easy to navigate. I'm not even up to search engine optimization yet, so if you sell me that, I might not even understand it. But if I have a website, that's the number one thing I'm looking for now.
Yeah, and we know in website design, the jargon, the technical concepts, all the things, SEO can sound, you can get an eye glazing glazing over.
Yeah, to the novice, it doesn't mean anything, and so I can understand that. So that's a great example. Okay, what else, Brian? You got another example, or Craig, of another company where you've had some differences with between prospects and customers?
We did have a banking company, a retail banking company, that was really aggressively expanding, and because they were convinced that the proximity and number of branches was the most important thing. And it turned out really not to be all that important. So I'm not saying that they stopped expanding because of that decision, but when they developed their marketing materials and their communication strategies, that wasn't something they necessarily said, okay, now we got to emphasize our number of branches. Well, they could stop doing that.
Yeah, and if I remember correctly, having gone through this one a couple of years ago with you, wasn't there also a big aha about ATMs? They were counting the number of ATMs, and that also didn't come in very high.
Not only did it not come in very high, it was almost at the very bottom.
And so banks that are investing in sticking ATMs all over the place maybe shouldn't spend that money. I guess at the time, consumers were like, I don't care about your ATMs. There's ATMs everywhere. Now, of course, with all the fees, it may matter, although I don't know that there's any difference if it's your bank or another bank.
But this is a surprise. Financial stability of the bank was the top-rated attribute.
And was not a surprise. It's a surprise to them, but was not a surprise to us because we were entering the recession and the banks were starting to have their problems. And, in fact, what can you tell me about financial stability coming up often or not often in today's world with recession?
Well, since the advent of the recession, 18 months, almost 2 years ago now, it doesn't matter what industry, we find that financial stability is raising in importance, and in some instances is the single most important thing someone considers when they make a decision to buy. And if you think about it, it's kind of obvious, because you want to make sure if you're buying a product and it's got to be used for years or a certain length of time, you want to make sure that the company you're buying from is going to be around. If there's a problem, they can service it. If it's a service, they have responsiveness to your needs. And if your company is not financially secure and they're not able to convey that, then you increase their unsurety of dealing with you.
So that goes back to my mantra, which is build confidence and remove risk in the buying decision. I'm not going to buy from a company that's not financially stable. And in this world and in this environment, if what I hear you're saying is, regardless of industry, that's really high on the scale. So, you know, our listeners, regardless of what the size of their business is or what they sell, how can they talk about, they should be, this is a rhetorical question, not for you guys, but they should be asking themselves, how can I talk about my own financial stability to convince people I am strong enough to be here through weathering this storm that we're currently in? Craig?
An awful lot of us, as consumers of something, particularly if it's something we consume repeatedly,
don't want to spend the time, we don't want to invest the effort to develop a relationship with a supplier of something if there's a risk that supplier is not going to be around.
That makes perfect sense.
That's why financial stability keeps moving up, because so many suppliers are at risk of not being around.
So let me ask you, out of all of the research surveys you've analyzed in the past year, roughly what percentage of them have financial stability in, say, the top five attributes?
Everyone we've tested.
Wow. Wow. So that really is a sign of the times. And prior to the recession, how often did you see it in the top?
I don't know if I'd have to go back and pull data. You know, I'm a left-brain guy, so I'd have to pull the data to see. But I know that it's been moving up gradually. I say 4 or 5 years ago, it was probably not in the top half.
Wow. So that's a real opportunity for those of you out there who are financially stable and may not be talking about it. It's a real marketing and sales message that you can help your customers build confidence and remove risk in their buying decision. So Craig, can you give us a couple of ideas? We only have a few minutes left. What are some ways in which the listeners can conduct this market research? And tell us a little bit about what you think the return on investment is.
Sure. The gold standard for market research is double-blind, conducted by a third party, where even the interviewer doesn't know who's sponsoring the research. That's what we talked about at the beginning of the show. You can get that done for probably between $10,000 and $15,000 and get a statistically valid sample. There are other ways to do it. If that is beyond your budget, or you're not convinced of the ROI, although I think I can probably convince you, it's somewhere on the, well, let's see, what's your ROI for a CD these days? 2%?
Yeah.
And the ROI we see on market research.
You're way too bullish. It's not 2%.
All right.
Anyway, I'm kidding.
Our company, our clients that invest $10,000 to $15,000 in market research typically see a return of, very, very conservatively, between 5 and 10% increase in revenue, nearly all of which goes right to the bottom line because they don't have to increase fixed costs because they're not at capacity.
Yeah, hardly anybody's at capacity.
Yeah, these days, that's mm-hmm. correct. So the ROI is huge.
Wow.
On the order of 200, 300, 400%.
Wow.
You can't get that on anything, not even gold.
That's right. That's pretty staggering. That's pretty good investment. So there's a lot of small companies out there. We only have 1 minute left. Just give me a couple of quick ideas for the small companies who don't even have the $10,000 budget.
Sure. If you're a member of a trade association, ask them if they've conducted research. It won't be exactly what you're after, but it's probably data you didn't have and it's valuable. If you subscribe to a trade magazine, they do it a lot. And say, well, I just saw one completed by a Chicago agent. There are online surveys. You typically don't get a very good response rate. You have to be very careful about the wording, but Zoomerang, SurveyMonkey, SurveyGizmo, check them out.
All right, well, thanks very much. If you have more questions on this, listeners, please send them to us at mindyourbiztoday.com. We're happy to answer them. Smart Advantage is these gentlemen from Smart Advantage, my company, I'm proud to say, will answer your questions anytime. So thanks for joining us. If you have more questions about research or anything, comments on future shows, we'd love to hear from you. mindyourbiztoday.com. And again, I'm Janie Smith, your host. Thank you, Vistage, for being our sponsor. Thanks very much. Have a good weekend, South Florida.
You've been listening to Mind Your Biz Today with Janie Smith, CEO of Smart Advantage, best-selling author and business consultant extraordinaire. Tune in next Friday at 4:30 p.m. for another great program here on 880 The Biz.